Ms. Jody, please do roll call.
Here.
Anthony
Rogers.
Here.
Derek Nimitz.
Here.
Dave Castellano.
Here.
Ron Ware.
Here.
Robert
Ogie. Here.
LaVon Whitaker. Absent. William Baker.
Present. Next up is the approval of minutes from July 21st, 2021. Any modifications, changes, motions? What say you?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the minutes as revised from July 21st, 2021.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? There's no discussion. We have a new law. Mr. Wicklund informed us of a roll call vote on everything. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Schlicky.
Yes.
Anthony
Brother. Yes.
Derek.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes.
Ron.
Yes.
Robert.
Yes.
William.
Yes. Next up is the chairman's report. I think I'm still the chairman. Happy summer. As it relates to move and roll on, this is a $275 million man-made engineering project to protect flooding. It's not maintained. Things that happened in September 2008 become more prominent in our everyday lives. But remember, we're dealing with Mother Nature. When we get 10 gallons of water for our 5-gallon bucket, we're going to have issues. We're far better prepared to take care of those issues today than we were prior to the events of September 2008. An ongoing thing as we continue to evolve and get better. There's always something to deal with, but never lose sight of the big picture, which is to make sure that the flood control scenario that we saw fail in September of 2008 doesn't ever happen again. Moving along is the finance report. Approval of the claims for August 2021. We'll need a motion to be able to have that discussion. What say you, gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the claims for August 2021 in the amount of $494,395.35.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Mr. Repay.
1 second. As always, we'll go through all the claims, and if there's any questions on any particular one that I've missed, feel free to ask. The largest claim by far is $246,000 for the purchase of the Geo Group property that was a part of the application from the Lake County Parks. So we agreed to reimburse them that amount. So all those documents, the interlocals have been signed, and so at that point, we are ready to reimburse them for that amount of money. The second claim would be $22,448 for first response maintenance. That's for the cleaning of the Arbor Gas lift station. That is a part of the deep tunnel project. It's the diversion off of Katie Marsh Ditch, goes underneath Arbor Gas. Every 5 years, we need to clean that. We partner with the town of Griffith. They are in charge of the videotape. They are in charge of cleaning out the outfall. One of the reasons why it's a little bit more expensive than it has been in the past is we started this project shortly before we got 10 inches of rain. At a certain point in time when the water was getting too high, we needed to open up the deep tunnel, and thus we got to start really from almost from the beginning to clean this area up again. So that's $22,448. Austin equipment for $41,125. That's removing the sediment underneath the Indianapolis Boulevard Bridge. A few months back, we had a whole bunch of sand under there from previous high water events. They went in and extracted that. That was for the proposal amount, nothing more. Security Door Incorporated, $37,730. We installed new fencing at the Burr Street pump station. They fixed the gate at the Burr South pump station. So right now we have no more holes and the gates are all in functioning order. That wasn't necessarily the case a few months back after some vandalism that has taken place. Earthworks with $11,000 for additional rock to help secure the rock ripple area. And then the Reliance Foundry for $19,885. That is, we're going to increase our security around some of the areas in Gary with
increased and better bollards than what is currently out there. They tend to get them mowed down, pulled over, you name it, what's occurred out there. So these have been proven supposedly to be top of the line, and we are going to try to resecure areas specifically around First Street, Clark, by the Eagle's Nest, and Chase Street.
Bollards still, as opposed to doing huge boulders?
Bollards have been moved.
Moved?
Moved.
Really? Like how many tons of boulder? I mean, there's pretty big rocks. I don't know.
I know.
Really?
Yeah.
And this is to do what? To get at the cape, at the copper?
I don't know what they're doing. I mean, it's mainly between Chase and Burr is our main issue. And I don't know why they're making such a big ordeal to do this, but they are definitely being successful. And what happens is we've got our mitigation site is over there. We have a pump station that's over there. We have cameras on it, but we're still trying to prevent that from happening while still allowing people to use it as a pedestrian / bike way.
But they're damaging this, but we're not seeing any vandalism to any of the equipment.
Not to the pump stations yet. I think the time that we almost caught them 2 years ago was probably word got around. But I really don't know. I really don't know if people are hunting out there. I don't know if people are just being people, or, you know, we have some fly dumping in the area, but it's just mainly, maybe it's just pure boredom.
We picked it up on camera.
No, because it's not happening. You know, the camera's only got some length to it. And it's mainly people on four-wheelers. Is that
why? So they can get the four-wheelers.
And most times, the stuff between Clark and Chase, it is that they've got to be trucks. They can't move what we have out there. I don't think they can move it out there with a four-wheeler. It's never normal. So that's what we're going to try in that area, and hopefully it's successful.
Okay.
Other than that,
we're going to have to go pretty deep in the ground. Then.
Yeah, I think it's 3.5 feet. I'm just saying.
That's what
the manufacturers recommend.
Deep for frosty.
Yeah, 21 inches, right?
42.
Yeah, that's not
deeper.
That's 3.5. I got a couple questions, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you say HWC is going to be ready for the spring park. Like I said, they're reporting this month's report. It says they're 35% complete with drawings. And there's a couple other items that they're not complete on. They say they're going to be ready September 1st.
Yeah, we had a meeting a week ago. Last week, when I met with them on Zoom, we went over some final items. They had some design issues, like what I did. One of them, they have a wall that allows for the water to come out. Well,
so they showed you some drawings.
Yes, okay. but they have now switched again because they was ordered like a faucet. And what I didn't like about it is it's coming out of a wall, you got a faucet. Oh, I envision kids jumping on the faucet, cracking it. Now I've got problems. So they're going to recess that back in. They're going to remove some of the lighting because I don't think it needs that much lighting. We're removing some of the sidewalks for the bike trail. Not necessarily, that's not an area that people access through bikes. They drive down there, and that's the big deal. I don't need that. I don't need the railings. I don't need some of the other issues. So we think it's closer to being done. I just emailed them again about lighting today because of the specifications for the other things that we're going to put out there that are going to hopefully help with security. Without naming what we think is going to be out there.
A couple other ones. Garcia, he reviewed two contracts, but they have no charges. Are they going to, what's the deal with that?
Yeah. We tell them that there's a deadline. And so either you submit your bills or you don't. And we all know we don't like changes in the claim list. So if they miss the deadline, they just move on to the next one.
And then the last one is this first response maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see better backup. It's not a huge bill, but it is
$22,000. We have that. It came late. We asked for the same thing, and we didn't amend it. So if you want to see it,
sheets or the,
these are all the timesheets we asked them for because we needed it for the state board. But
right.
We knew they were out there because I was out there with them. I said, I just can't accept it as that way.
Okay.
Now, is that going to be an ongoing annual maintenance scenario, or is this a one-time situation with that trash? Is this the trash rack or the lift station?
No, it's the actual tunnel underneath Arbor Gas. So every 5 years, you have to stop the water from flowing in. You have to demuck it, which means take out all the silt and schmuck and everything else that's involved there. And then
schmutz.
Yeah, schmutz. And then videotape it to make sure the seals are still in good shape. And so, actually, they just gave me the video here. But according to
that, was the schmutz.
No, that's not the schmutz. The schmutz is someplace else. So the video, according to them and their report, is okay. There's no seals that are broken, no issues with it. And we have to submit it to the Corps because that's a part of the project. So every 5 years we have to go through this. And we paid to get the stuff taken out at the end. It actually worked out, believe it or not, if you talk to Griffith, that I would agree with us, is that when we had to stop it midway, that sudden flow that we had to open, when we had to open it up because of the 10 inches of rain, it actually forced more stuff because there's no really way to get, it's a 9-foot sewer, so there's really no way to get all the way down. It's over a mile long to get in there. So when you force them through, it just forced more stuff. And so we were able to have a better cleaning because the video folks will show you the garbage and some of the blockages. But for their purposes, we just need to make sure the seal's above us. And there are no really ways to get in. You literally have to walk through it. So it's not like you can go 200 feet and come out of another manhole. It's 100%. You're walking from Katie Marsh to the end fall, which is at the river.
Thank you. I have a question with regards to Lake County Parks. There's an invoice. There's no backup.
For the 246?
Yeah.
That's a part of the agreement that we agreed to.
You just give them the money, not knowing whether the acquisition actually went through?
We have that.
We have that will be the backup. So correct. We have the backup.
Yes.
Okay. So they did do the acquisition and they now own the property.
Correct.
Okay. That would be backup. Okay. That was it. Thank you. Anybody else?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes.
Dan, on the Indianapolis Boulevard, the sediment was removed, 400,000 cubic yards. Is there like a before or after pictures?
I have the before and Garcia's got the after. I did not go down there because it was just at the beginning of the NDOT's project to fix that bridge that is currently now under construction. So
yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I don't go there. I go down North County. Yeah.
Is that a structural or is that the deck? Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner.
That answers.
Okay. Yes, I mean, is it structural from the standpoint they're doing anything underneath that's going to impact the catches? No.
The only thing that they're doing is helping the deck so to not retain water so it doesn't crack at a long likelihood, I guess. They're doing it on all the expressways.
The last invoices for Patrick shows 100%. That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
No more.
All right, folks, any other questions? Got a motion and a second, Mrs. Lambert.
Yes.
Abstain.
Anthony
Barber.
Yes.
Derrick.
Yes.
Did yes.
Ron Ware. Yes.
Robert.
Yes. Yes. All right, Mr. Repay, moving right along. Project tracker.
Just from a Robert's rule thing, you should probably just say that Mr. Gazdecki has joined us just so that.
I apologize for being late.
Mr. Gazdecki's here.
I'm not calling him out. He'll be late for class, but just telling him. We'll start with the project that we completed, working to try to schedule some sort of ribbon cutting with the City of Lake Station and Lake County Parks, and that's the rock ripple. That was the rocks for $11,000 for earthworks. I went out with Chairman Baker out there a few weeks back with some suggestions on how to better secure it. Make it more look more natural without impacting our permit that we currently have with the DNR. So that we believe has been achieved. We are going to add some cameras in that area and waiting for a time frame as to when they are going to put them up. And Lake Station has agreed that they would be the customer for the old street light at the 29th and Wyoming. So
We have an agreement that we're still working to put through as far as who's responsible for what. We'll be responsible for the grass and for anything that's lodged inside the river. County will be responsible for the deck and the approaches for the bike trail. And then in theory, you'll have Lake Station, which will be responsible for just general maintenance of the parking lot. Not everything, but that's the general consensus of everything that we're looking at, to delineate as far as responsibilities. The Army Corps inspections, Gary North, Gary South, First Street, Marshtown, had the outbriefs. We have the finals. They've all come back and it's minimally acceptable, which is what we normally have. There's only three ratings. It's either you're perfect, you're minimally acceptable, or you're not acceptable. So we are acceptable and still active in the flood insurance program, which are good things for the residents, which when they ultimately, the city of Gary goes for their LOMAR in that area, which will reduce and in most cases eliminate flood insurance for those folks. Hammond Highland Munster inspections, we received the draft reports. We have a couple items that we need to address. A small trash rack possibly was recycled, possibly was had fallen into the river and we cannot find it. There is a property owner on 179th Street that has built their own drainage system that goes into our river stream without authorization from the Corps. We need to address that through a letter. And we have several items through our attorney that we'll be addressing. I guess if we're on attorneys, I guess we can talk about Mr. Lee, who appeared last month. He is working, our attorney is working on addressing that issue with the easements and the language, and as well as the Corps and their real estate department to get that addressed. So I would hope that by next meeting, we'll have a final answer for that. The mitigation reports for both of our projects, as we talked about earlier, Hobart is in the final stages of being complete, will be turned over to DNR in October. The one that's the in-project mitigation, which is just off of Chase Street, will be turned over in 2024. But both projects are on time and still within the budget after the small change order that they had there in the Hobart mitigation. We've got a couple things going on in Hart's Ditch. Wilcher's there doing some tree work from 45th to the confluence. And then we have a couple repairs we're working with our friends at the surveyor's office to fix on foliage where there is massive, I don't know what else to say, there's just, it's collapsing in two folks' backyard. So we're
massive erosion.
Yeah, erosion. It's, I don't know if erosion even caught it. The gentleman may have 8 feet in his backyard before he, I mean, from his patio to the river's edge. So it went quick. It's at an outfall of a stormwater. So we think, and through Burke, they believe that could possibly be a cause for the expedited erosion. Spring Park, as we had spoken about, anticipating to be done, will be done by the end of this month, go out for bid beginning of this September, with it being awarded on September 15th at our next meeting. So everything seems to be going well after the few hiccups with the regulatory agencies. That, we believe, has been solved. We still continue to do scanning in our office, or at least we stopped doing that because everyone went back to school. But you will start seeing the fruits of all those labors here soon. A lot of paper that has been recycled. The Corps loves paper, and we've scanned it now, and it will be a lot better, easier to access a lot of information, including all the as-bills for all these segments, the manuals, the minutes, the agendas, the claim list, the draw that we did from the state of Indiana, all been scanned. So
I'll scan, let me interrupt. How have you been tagging those for retrieval? I mean, how are we archiving it? By segment, by date, by how?
It's all been. So if you're segment 5-2, it's been put in at 5-2.
Right.
Now what the test is going to be is when I work with Roman to put it on the website so that it is in the segment order of, let's just say for construction, it's segment 1, it's segment 2, it's 5-2, it's 5-2A, 5-2B. The minutes and agendas are all going to be done by date. The draws will be done in order of the draw. So draw number 1 to State of Indiana. For those of you that don't remember, before there were fees that were charged to the residents in the watershed, we have to draw down from the State of Indiana through the Indiana Budget Agency. So we would have to submit all of our claims with a cover letter. They would submit it, agree to it, and send it back to us, which was normally probably a 60-plus day affair for us to get a bill paid on time. So all that is just historical information. It's for the people that come behind us to realize what everything was before it was in 2012. So
just that you brought up 5-2, please make sure that it shows how the Corps was grossly over budget and significantly over their timeline.
It will be reflected in the minutes of today's meeting. We have a Munster closure exercise planned for September 8th. It's something that we must do every year, is demonstrate that we can throw the sandbags or whatever closure comes up. So that one has been planned for September 8th at 9 a.m. That will be on River Road off of Holman Avenue between the expressway and the river. The Burr Street closure was approved by Norfolk and Southern. So on September 13th, they're going to shut down the tracks for a one-day construction to put in the permanent closure structures for the Burr Street. So that's both on the east and the west side of Burr Street. That will be, once again, taking away the human intervention that we try to get rid of for people during an emergency. That won't have to be closed. Corps will be on board. Our folks will be on board, and of course the railroad, Norfolk and Southern, are going to be the ones that are going to be installing it. We're going to owe them $53,000 to do it. That includes the flagmen, that includes the material, but it will be done, and we won't have to worry about it in the future years, but for to make sure that it's staying where it needs to be. But I have no reason to believe that putting that metal, and the good thing is we won't have that piece of aluminum get recycled every other year that we purchase for $4,800. So that will permanently be dealt with. Future projects, North Todd Bridge, the town of Munster went in and got approval for a post and panel closure at North Todd Bridge. We are going to purchase that. We are going to install that and turn that over to the good friends at the town of Munster so that they no longer have to put in jersey barriers that don't work, as well as what was originally planned in that area, which were the water bladders. And before that, it was a sandbag closure. So this will put an end to that closure in theory. Other than that, we are still working on the historical project, interviewing cities and towns folk. We've got 7 communities that have been notified. They will start to be interviewed. And we're sort of working 3-4 communities every 2 weeks so we don't get too overloaded. Once we get the communities done, then we'll start going into certain specific neighborhoods that were impacted, Wicker Park Estates, you go into Hobart and talk to some folks there. Crown Point, Gary, Marshalltown, those will all be community outreach ones. But we figured doing the communities is going to be the best. There's everyone in a certain area that we can easily notify. So it's moving forward and it's no longer stalled. I don't have anything further.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Repe? What's going on in the field?
I want just yes, a general sir. Question. How's the advisory board regular meetings going? And I guess sort of a secondary question. That's the same group that reviews the emergency plan, the book, and all that stuff, right?
We have 2 separate groups.
Yeah.
The advisory board reviews the applications for money before it comes to you.
Right.
The O&M group meets every month. They're the ones that recommended the purchase of the 6 inch pumps, and they would store it. They're also the ones that when we planned the closure exercise, they're also the ones that when we, for instance, when that accident happened with the child that fell in to the river, what we do to make it easier for first responders to go there. So, you know, it depends on the month. This month is going to be that we reviewed our inspection reports for any comments that they may have had or disagreed with the Corps there. So like for September, the September meeting will be the closure exercise. Right. We will just do the closure exercise in lieu of it. And then we also have to balance because they're mostly public works folks. And so after September, it gets a little bit dicey because they got to pick up leaves or they got, you know, it gets, you sort of
no balance overlap between the two groups at all.
What's that?
No overlap between the two groups. Like, is any talents in the same person to vote or whatever?
No, I think the O&M group is mainly consists of the communities along the river.
Right.
Gary, Griffith,
and
Island, Munster. Not all groups always attend.
Gotcha.
And they attend, you know, sometimes they have things going on. You know, you got the engineer, sometimes they can come, sometimes they can't. So we try to just hit the common topics that are pertinent at the time.
Just real quick, is the book part of the inspection, the annual inspection?
What book?
Our O&M manual. Is that part of the Corps inspection?
Yeah, I mean, the O&M manual, excuse me, is the guide because all those gates need to be run up and down. So they need to make sure that gate, you know, Hammond would be HA1-2. There's a problem with it. There isn't a problem with it. It passed. And that's how they label it and they go forward on it. So, and that's why we do these exercises, because as a part of them also is that manual says that we have to close this area.
Whatever frequency.
Right? Yeah, if we can't close it. Now, it's not perfect because, you know, we're doing it under perfect conditions. We're setting the time. We're setting the date. You know, we're, in theory, it'll be a nice day.
Right.
But the more we take out these closures, like the one on Burr Street, we don't have to practice that anymore. I mean, the one that's probably going to be the one that will be costly, but is a difficult one to do is the railroad crossing by the BMV and Wendy's between Highland and Hammond, when, you know, they have a one-ton I-beam full of concrete that they want to put across a railroad track. Well, it's not easy to do that, and it's even more difficult to coordinate with the railroad because their guidelines state that they can run a rail line as long as the engineer can see the line. That as long as they can see the tracks, they can see the tracks underwater. So technically,
you could be doing
you can still doing it. Train and I'm not going to be doing closure when I got a train. So
are those digital books now? They're not hard copies.
No, you can go on our website and get them.
We update them or update them continuously.
The core updates them every like 8 years. So the last update was, I believe, 2 years ago that they updated them. So there may be some out-of-date closures that we may have completed in the time that they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
But as of 2 years ago, they had them completed. They get them printed, and then we put them on our website.
Okay.
Dan, Hart Ditch, the two lots, so this is a densely populated part of that whole system. Was that classified as an emergency? And when the surveyor did it at through Burke, are they looking to roll that into the contract with Burke as a part of our overall schematic for that, our game plan, not schematic, our game plan for that ditch?
It is densely populated. They do want to roll it into that agreement, the agreement that we had last year or 2 years, was it 2 years or last year, where they would pay for the engineering. Since it's deemed an emergency, you don't have to go through the permitting process because of, my understanding, the threat to safety and human life. So they can go in there and they can do a permit after the fact. Now, there is additional securing or hard armoring of the bank that isn't an emergency that they are still working on designing areas and continuing off of what we did in previous years.
Is there any challenges in this area with any of the NIPSCO poles that are falling in there too?
There's challenges everywhere because this is an older neighborhood. The houses are extremely close together.
Can't get in there.
Access, well, thankfully, the neighbor that is not impacted is allowing them to use the driveway. There is an Ipsco pole that is hanging free. I don't know how else to describe it. It's not attached to the ground.
It's supported by the wires.
It's supported by the wires. That's a good answer.
Okay. That's disturbing. Calumet Avenue pedestrian bridge. What's up with that?
My understanding, they've got the 408, which is the permit by the Corps that allows them to build and construct it. There were some last-minute emails regarding the color of it,
okay,
the color of the approaches and the stone, but my understanding is they still plan on bidding it out. I would highly be skeptical of them starting it this year, but they could probably bid it out, you know, late this year for construction in spring.
Thank you.
I mean, I know they took down the church. The church is gone. And I know there were some issues with that they were trying to work through as far as a small pump that was over there by the antenna or the cell tower. But they received their permit, from my understanding, from Colin at the Chicago District.
Thank you. Anything else for Mr. Ipe? All right, do the intro, please. For the next up, which is a presentation.
You want to do that? I can do it.
Commissioner Broadnex would love to do an introduction.
So, Commissioner Broadnex, you're up.
Thank you. Yeah, so we have Earth Charter Indiana, Kathy Sipple, and one of the six interns that we supported to do a greenhouse gas study throughout really northern northwest Indiana, not just a watershed area. And Kathy and Juliana, is it Rosen or Rosen? Rosen. We'll be doing a presentation. And Juliana is a student at Purdue and actually is from Munster. So
thank you. Well, ladies, have at it.
Thank you very much.
If you could speak in and introduce yourself into the microphone, because we're recording this for posterity's sake, so it's really cool from that standpoint.
Yes. Well, Julianne is getting the slideshow up. I'll just go ahead and tell you. I'm Kathy Sipple. I'm the Senior Resilience Coordinator with Earth Charter Indiana. And Julianne, as Commissioner Brodnax already said, is one of our very able interns. And we found that calling them climate fellows actually gave them a little bit more respect when they'd ask the cities and utilities for data. But we also had a surprise guest. I just want to acknowledge her behind us. We didn't know she was going to be able to join. Kathy Luther from NERC was another very valuable partner on this project. And we would have definitely included her had we known she would be here. So we'll go ahead and get started. First of all, we just want to say thank you. This would literally not have been possible without your support. You gave us $12,000 to help fund these interns to work for 10 weeks. And you literally made history with your gift. This was the first regional greenhouse gas emissions inventory in the state of Indiana, and one of just a handful in the country. So it's really pretty record-breaking. Also, this is going to provide us some baseline data that we're going to be using for the next phase, which will be doing a climate action plan, if all things go as we hope, next year. And it allowed me, as an employee of Earth Charter Indiana, to engage with the interns and with NERC throughout the summer, and to supplement the two interns that were appointed to us by IU. We were able to hand select interns from the region, so we were very happy to get four from the region. And it helped an intern like Julianne get some real-world experience that we hope will come back to the region to help out. Oh, I should say too, on the slide, we do now have a PDF of the first draft. I don't have it printed. It's printed nowhere, and it's not even fit for consumption yet, or we would have been happy to share a link. We're still checking the data, but it's really come along in this last week, so we're very excited. Just to let you know a little bit where we are in the timeline, we didn't know exactly where we would be when we scheduled this presentation, but Julianne came on board in May, started full force in June, and then here we are in August. We're literally just getting the data up, and we'll go through the end of the timeline a little bit later.
Hi, everyone. So as Kathy said, I was one of the team of interns that was able to work on this project. And unfortunately, due to COVID, we're only able to meet in person once this whole summer, but we were able to adapt. We had weekly or daily co-working sessions. And our intern team came from all different towns, the majority being from the region. And then, as Kathy said, I'm actually from Munster, so very exciting to be speaking with you here today. The interns also came from three different universities, Purdue, IU, and IUN, and then six different majors. So we have backgrounds in data, engineering, climate policy, and natural resource management. And these different backgrounds allowed us to give a more holistic approach to the project. So we have experts in various areas that were applicable to the project. For the jurisdictions that were included in this project, we had five interns that handled 14 jurisdictions, which included three counties and 11 cities or towns. It is important to measure and identify the emissions from these jurisdictions, as their contribution to climate change cannot be addressed until it is actually measured. That made this project the necessary groundwork for climate action in the participating communities and then at the region as a whole. Compared to other interns that were present in the cohort through IU, those interns only have one jurisdiction to complete in the same time frame, and our team of five was able to complete 14 in that same amount of time. So as a result, our collaborative method proved to be more cost-effective and efficient in completing inventories for a larger number of jurisdictions in the same area, which allowed us to give a regional picture of greenhouse gas emissions.
Just want to tell you, we are not going to do a deep dive. I know you guys have a lot on your agenda today, but for anybody who wants to know deep dive behind the data, we are going to be doing another presentation on September 2nd through NERC, through Kathy Luther's committee that she heads up, the Environmental Management Policy Committee. So that's accessible via Zoom, and you can get there through NERC's website. We can share the slide deck too, so you'll have that link should anybody want that.
Now I'm just going to provide a very brief technical overview of the project. So on this slide here, as one example of the output of the inventory, this pie chart contains the results for Lake County. We chose 2017 as the baseline year for Lake County's inventory, as in 2019, Gary, Michigan City completed the same greenhouse gas inventory, and their baseline year was 2017. So in order to be on par, we also chose that same year. The data for each sector that was analyzed was either provided to us by utilities, or we utilized data from the EPA or Indiana Department of Environmental Management. The data that we utilized for the report contains the data that was best available to us during this small time frame, and the report is able to be updated as new data comes in, when and if better data comes available to us. As you can see on the graphic, the emissions for each jurisdiction were broken down into seven sectors. These sectors were transportation and mobile sources, solid waste, water and wastewater, commercial, industrial, and residential energy, then process and fugitive emissions. And then for jurisdictions that have a very large impact from industrial emissions, such as Lake County, we also are providing a pie chart that excludes those emissions, so that the sectors whose emissions can be more easily acted upon at the community level were identified for those communities. And then to provide you an example of a town's inventory output, here's the chart for Lake Station. Each community participating in this project will receive a detailed report with the results of their individual inventories, and they all will receive a similar pie chart with their outputs. While having all three counties participate was essential in capturing the comprehensive regional inventory, having these individual jurisdictions participating allowed us to identify clear and actionable data on the community level. And as the characteristics of each sector vary greatly between city and town, capturing inventories at both the individual and regional level aids in the climate action phase of this project, as areas of need have been more easily and accurately identified compared to if we just did the inventory on the county level. Now, in terms of how this relates to flood prevention, as the increase in flooding is prevalent in the Midwest, as the impact of climate change continues to grow in severity, This inventory served as the groundwork for establishing where each jurisdiction is in terms of its impacts on greenhouse gas emissions, which allows for us to identify which sectors will require future mitigation in order to combat the sector's impact on greenhouse gas emissions and then therefore climate change. Here's an example of an area that I have experience in that can be utilized as a climate mitigation strategy. So that is the use of rain gardens or bioswales to combat stormwater pooling. Methods such as these can serve as a stormwater management tool, as well as a method to sequester carbons and remove pollutants from the air. So pictured on this slide is a project that I completed in the spring of 2020, where we installed multiple rain gardens to help combat some stormwater pooling issues. And in terms of a local example, Gary, who is a community that, as I said, completed the same greenhouse gas inventory in 2019, recently implemented a bioswale as a form of green infrastructure to mitigate stormwater runoff issues and help prevent flooding.
So the next steps, I mean, it's great that we now have this baseline data. None of us want to just have another report that gets dusty on the shelf. What we really want to do is go right into climate action planning. And so with any luck at all, I'm very happy to say I've got this young woman who will be completing out the year. She graduates in December, and she's going to be extending her internship through the end of the year. So she will help me prepare an application. We're going to be reaching out to all the communities that participated in this phase to encourage them to stay with that momentum and stay with us through the climate action planning. So IU kind of has this rotating cycle where they do the greenhouse gas emissions on their odd years, and then the climate action plan on even years. So we will be submitting that application by December when it's due, and hopefully in January we'll be hitting the ground running with developing a climate action plan. We don't have that yet. When we were planning for this, Commissioner Brodnax was saying, okay, so what's next? I'm like, that's exactly what we'll be doing next year, is figuring out the what's next. And there's even an additional stage beyond that, and that's the community engagement. So just developing the plan next year, and then hopefully reaching out to communities and getting them on board to implement the program. Just want to include and acknowledge IU's Environmental Resilience Institute. They've been a really helpful partner. They host webinars that any of you are very welcome to join. They've got a whole lot of tools on here too, like the Commissioner Resilience Index that you may find valuable. Just want to let you know about their toolkit, and would be happy to make any introductions if you would like. And also to learn more, I wanted to invite you, anybody who'd be interested, to join virtually, unless you really want to go down to Evansville. Earth Charter is hosting its 6th Annual Climate Leadership Summit. So it attracts a lot of leaders at the city levels, county levels, that are doing great things to look at climate mitigation, including reducing flooding. So you're certainly welcome to do that, and we will allow time for Q&A if you've got it. I'm not sure how we're doing with time.
Excellent, thank you. All right, back to the board. Any questions for these young ladies?
Take that as a compliment.
All right, moving right along on our agenda, other issues, new business.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the Stinky Creek portion of the City of Hobart Diversion and Regional Stormwater Watershed application, pending legal review and final execution of an interlocal agreement in the amount of $450,000 for engineering.
So there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Pick one, Mrs. Lambert. Mr. Repe, anything to state on that?
Nope.
Any questions, discussion?
Not to exceed.
Yes, we need to include that. That needs to be captured.
So this is a watershed application for the City of Hobart, just for your edification, and all of the information that was submitted, Mr. Repe, correct me if I'm wrong, is on the website.
As far as the application and the presentation, it should be, yes.
Yes, thank you. All right, we have a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
I wanted to ask one quick question.
This is okay. The Stinky Creek portion of the application only. Does not include lateral 6, correct?
Correct.
All right. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Anthony
yes.
Derek Minnick.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert
Ochi. Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Other issues, new business. Say you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the Lake County Parks Little Calumet Conservation Collaborative Phase 2 watershed application pending legal review and final execution of an interlocal agreement not to exceed $175,000 over the course of 1 year.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Some discussion. So we've talked about this in the past as it related to work that was done by this collaborative group who leverages the money to do quite an extensive amount of work along the system. Again, all that detail is on the website if you want to go back and take a look at it. We went through that, you know, over the last couple of months. Paying the bills now.
So I guess really just for the public's edification, it's not a penalization of the entity. They asked for $350,000. We're supporting half of that right now. They asked for it over a 2 year period, so we're funding year one currently. Really, and that's sort of subject to how they initially performed and reported out to us. They did great work, but the reporting was subpar initially, but they turned the corner significantly. But we just wanted to have a little bit more control of this, so we're supporting the first year.
Any other discussion? Either none. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Schulke.
Yes.
Tom Bethany.
Yes.
Anthony
Rodman. Yes.
Derek Minnick.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert
Ochi. Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to authorize the executive director to advertise for bids on the Spring Park Natural Spring Project based upon approval of plans.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. So this is to go out and get bids, Mr. Repay, based on plans for the, are we calling it Spring Park Natural Spring Project? Where's that located?
Located.
Did you come up with that name?
No. You can name it after yourself if you like. It's located just to the north of the railroad tracks and just south of the intersection of 35th and Chase. It's a natural spring. It's been there for quite a few years. This is an enhancement. And the reason why we're doing this now is the plans will be ready for to be bid between our meeting. And so if you authorize me to do this, we hope to have the bids ready and received for our September 15th meeting and hopefully awarded at that time so they can begin this fall.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Either none. Mrs. Lambert, we have a motion and a second.
Yes.
Tom Bethany.
Yes.
Anthony Barnett.
Yes.
Derek Minnick.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ochi.
Yes. Yes. All right, moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, I move to authorize the executive director to advertise for bids to clean and video culverts within the Hammond, Highland, and Munster segments of the river.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Let's clean up the mess. No more schmutz. Mrs. Lambert.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. On we go.
Mr. Chairman, I move to authorize the executive director to purchase 3 each 6-inch diesel pumps for emergency use pending review and final execution of a memorandum of understanding.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. We're buying equipment. Why are we buying equipment, Dan?
Mr. Chairman, there was a point in late June when two of our pump stations went out. We got one of them back up running. One of them had an extended period of time where it was not running. We were in a situation where we needed to get water moving over through the levee. We called our vendors. All the vendors had been sold out of all their pumps. Thankfully, we were able, and I've cut out a lot of the other stuff, but we were able to eventually get it restarted.
But we had on standby, the city of Hammond and the town of Griffith had two smaller pumps. When Commissioner Broadnax talks about the O&M group, this is one of the discussions that come up as far as how that works, what equipment we have available, and we went through that. However, those communities had higher priorities for other of their pumps, and this was the suggestion that came out of that group.
All right, my first question is, where are we keeping these three diesel pumps? If we should authorize the acquisition of pieces of equipment that are engines that need to be maintained and kept up to standards for the emergency use.
So at the last meeting, the three communities that were there and that had expressed an interest and desire to host these would be the town of Highland, the town of Griffith, and the town of Munster.
So we're going to keep them there, and they're going to be responsible for maintaining those and rolling those out? Or is that you guys, Decky and I, have to go get them?
I would hope not.
Yeah, me too.
The agreement, once it's put together by our attorney, will state that they will house them upon our need. If we are to need them, they will bring them to the location and start them, set them all up, and then until we can get our pump station group, which is GLEM, to monitor them. But we will have them set them up. The reason why we went with 6-inch and not anything larger, because anything larger would need more than your standard pickup or some small vehicle to set up. You would need, you're starting to get into Bobcats and 2 tons and a whole lot more material. So 6-inch, we feel that would suffice if any of our pumps were to go down in an emergency.
So, you know, I understand the premise and why we do, and this is why we have the emergency generators on our major pieces of equipment, and should continue to look at that as being the primary way to be able to handle any loss of power through our electrical provider. In the middle of an event, having gone through enough of these, we see what happens with the local municipalities and our folks. They have a lot of places to go and a lot of issues to take care of. I'm just somewhat concerned in how this is going to work into that scenario. So, you know where I stand on us having equipment and having to continue to do that, but you know, I'll relinquish to the board, let them have those conversations.
And just for clarification, the issue that we had with the pump wasn't electric based, it was mechanical. There was an issue with the, lack of a better word, a fuse within inside the pump. So we had power. We had the backup power ready, but it just was, it was a mechanical issue that we could not.
So this wouldn't have helped anyway.
These pumps would have helped, but the backup generator wouldn't have helped because we had power. We just couldn't get it to the board.
Understood. Thank you. Any comments?
What is the expected expenditure? I'm sorry.
It's they're $40,000 a piece, so $120,000.
So Broadnax,
these are diesel, right?
Correct.
So we won't need juice, electrical juice.
Correct. And the
you need diesel juice then.
The the specs are in the packet. They're flight pumps. They're 6-inch. There's 200 foot of hose for the outfall. 150 intake. The warranty is for 1 year on the pump, 2 years or 20,000 hours on the engine.
Any other comments?
Seems like a lot of money. I mean, in all the years I've been on the commission, I think this is the only time we've ever really been caught in a bad predicament. I question whether three are necessary. I question whether the municipalities that will be storing them will actually need them. I mean, they're more apt to be deployed somewhere else. Is that a true statement?
I mean, I hope they don't need to be deployed with us, but the problem was there was no vendor that was available for us, and that's what prompted this. So it's hard. It's a hard question to answer. I hope we don't need them. The problem is, I think, if I remember correctly, a 6-inch only does, I want to say, 6,000 gallons per minute. And some of our pumps are, you're talking 35,000 gallons per minute. So
I mean, even if you deploy all three of these to the First Street or Grant Street, which are the two larger ones, you're still going to be running at a deficit going forward.
And it seems like where we consistently have some sort of an issue, it's either at Burr or Grant.
Well, Burr or Grant are the ones that get used the most. Burr, right. South, Burr, North, Grant, East, Grant, West. Broadway is very small. Ironwood's very small. Marshalltown, small as well. Broadway could probably be deactivated. Doesn't it? Wow. It runs no hours. Or it was an overbuild, in my opinion, by the Corps. And NDOT, when they came in and redid Broadway, they put one at 33rd in Connecticut anyways. They bypassed ours. So the runtime for Broadway is nothing. So when you look at the important ones or the ones that run, even look at the utility bills, you can see Grant and Burr are the ones that tend to be the ones that do the most work.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
Again, it'll clearly be called out. These are under our control at times of emergency. And they're just storing these at our direction. Will there be some kind of maintenance log and quarterly testing of these done and given to you so we know that they're ready to fire up in an emergency?
And I think those are good questions that could be brought up and delineated in the agreement themselves for what they require to provide to us, whether it's a maintenance log or if they use it, when did you use it? How many hours did you use it for? You know, in that account.
Understood. Hope we never have the data, but if we have them, then we have them.
Well, I have a hard time understanding if this is our asset, why they would ever use them, unless it was authorized by us.
Well, that's sort of the understanding. The thinking is if they can use them in the event of their emergency, but if we have an emergency, we discussed this sort of a little earlier as to how you work this. You could go two ways. You can have them buy it and us reimburse it so they can have their own asset. But the problem is if we call on it, it's theirs. And we've all seen, at least 2008 will tell you, even though we're trying to share resources, everyone sort of goes to what they have. And that's what we don't want to see. That we try to build that relationship so that we're trying to help each other out. But at the end of the day, people are focused on themselves and their own community. Because we can only suggest we can suggest to close North Cobb Ridge, lack of it, just to using a term. But if one community doesn't want to do it, I can't force
it. If it's sitting in their yard and they're utilizing it for something else, and we say we need it right away, they could easily say, sorry, it's taken. And then they deal with, it's one of these things, I'm going to ask for forgiveness, not for permission.
That's true. They could, but the way they agree,
and then
the theory will be written.
We just bought three pumps and they're just sitting there and can't use them.
Now, I understand what you're saying, but in theory, I don't think that at least the three communities that expressed interest have had a bad relationship with us, that they have these similar pumps on hand for them. They feel comfortable with them. I would hope that they wouldn't, because ultimately, all those communities are eventually going to come back to us someplace down the line looking for something else, I would imagine, whether it's Griffith needs the levee built or Highland wants the bridge.
Yeah, I would love that conversation. You know, great.
I get what you're saying,
yeah.
But the agreement should be, look, this is what you agreed to. I mean, they could use it on some smaller occasions, but to Ron's point, you know, if we get a log from them as to what their use time is and their maintenance and the scheduled maintenance and making sure that it is fits with the whole upkeep of that.
Okay. If we force it. In 10 years, how many times have we, and I'm not saying tomorrow could be the day.
Yeah.
But in 10 years, what has it been, one time that we could have used it?
I mean, technically, we own a sandbag machine, mm-hmm. that we found that we didn't, I mean, not any of you or us that were here, that in 2008, that sandbag machine was in demand. Mm-hmm. So we had no control over it. They couldn't get it past the Kankakee River, and we were sort of in trouble. We also found it when I first started in 2010, that same sandbag machine
when we got it closer to the river, it was sitting out in the middle of a field at the Lake County Highway Department's outside, rusty. And we fixed it up. And now that same stag bag machine is sitting in Highland Public Works. And even though other people were like, oh, we've lent it out. We've lent it out to, was it Shady Shores or whatever, Sumaba Resorts. We've gone down there and rented out, and not rented out, but let them borrow it.
Right.
But, I mean, that may be the scenario where we have an asset that we can deploy to help someone that is truly in need.
Maybe the other question is, and Tom brought it up, do we need all three?
No.
Well, we talked about two initially. And I believe someone brought up three in an exchange on whatever discussion. The reason why the thought of three was because of what I spoke about earlier. Some of our pumps, the larger pumps, are 25,000-30,000 gallons per minute. You know, a 6-inch pump isn't going to get you, I think it's going to get you 3,000 or 4,000 gallons per minute. So if you only have one, I mean, that's good. But I don't know if it's going to keep up with the demand that you're going to need if, say, one of either Grant or Burr go down. I understand all the whole arguments. I'm bringing up what O&M folks brought to me. So I get the argument. These are all sort of talked about before too. So it's really whatever you think.
Well, I'm looking at the maximum capacity on this unit. It says 2290 US gallons per minute. So that's only
2300.
That's only 6,000. We're touching, if we truly produce 30,000 gallons per minute with the pump output.
Those are max capacities for the pumps.
Well, yeah, but we're a tenth.
We were at zero.
Were there any other proposals sought besides the one?
The reason why we went with six was simply because it was set up.
No. This is from one distributor or manufacturer, whatever.
Then the flight.
Did we solicit any other vendors?
No. And the reason why was because they all have flight pumps. And so if those hoses, if we needed 300 feet of discharge, we could use the same coupling to get it to extend further. And that was why we didn't want to buy more hose with one or the other. They all, if we're trying to have the same type of equipment that all these municipalities have. So Griffith has similar, Highland has similar, Munster.
Is there any other option as far as storage other than the municipalities? I understand that fits into our model of what we've done, but I mean, as far as the size of these things, could they fit in any of the secured locations that we have, like inside the gates or fences somewhere, build a tough shed or something?
I mean, we really don't have any place to store. I mean, we have our office and we have a U-locket.
I'm talking about inside one of the places that we've got, $80,000 of security around.
All the pump stations are exterior pump stations except for Burr Street, and there's no room to put that pump inside the Burr Street.
No, I'm talking about an auxiliary building.
You want to build a building?
A shed.
Why don't we?
I'm just asking the question.
I know we don't have an auxiliary building if you'd like to build
one. Is there enough space for me to build an auxiliary building with Gazdecki and Mushlinski, and we'll go out there with our little hats and do that? I mean, that's what I'm just asking the question. Is there space in any of the secured locations where we have all this $100,000 worth of cameras and, special ballards to be able to put this stuff in?
If you want to build a shed, there probably could be two locations that potentially would fit that.
Yes.
$60,000.
Okay, thank you. All right. We have a motion and a second. We can deny or approve.
What's the availability of this equipment? How quickly can they deliver it?
I thought it was, hold on.
I didn't
see can't that. Do it in the middle of the night when we're having a problem.
He's saying if we order it,
how long is it going to take? Wait 8 months, 8 years?
I'm doubt that thing's sitting on the lot.
It says delivery time associated with quotation.
I thought
a chain issue.
No, there is no supply and chain issue. I've already checked that one. I thought it was 60 days, what he told me verbally, but I don't see it in writing. So,
okay.
I'm,
I'm just going to, I'll put a preface on that's what I was told, because there was, that was my question, because a lot of projects are supply chain issues right at this point in time.
All right, got to, this is a precedent, folks, I'm just telling you. Any other discussion?
I think we need to talk about this a little bit more.
Okay.
I like to see other proposals. That's just my...
Mr. Wicklund and this Robert guy, and it's not OG that makes these rules. If I've got a motion in a second, and what's the process?
Can I make a withdraw?
You withdraw the second, you draw the main motion, and then someone makes a new motion to defer or to table or to whatever motion. So whoever made the second has to remove their second.
Assuming I want to withdraw the motion.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It goes in reverse order.
Okay. Who made the second, Mrs. Lambert?
I did.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other discussion? Either or none. We got a motion and a second. Let's go.
Tom Schulze?
No.
Tom Gatzecki?
No.
Anthony Broadbent?
Yes.
Derek Nivens?
Yes.
Dave Castellano?
Yes.
Ron Ware?
Yes.
Robert Ritchie?
No.
William Baker?
No. All right, moving right along. Next up.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to approve the joint funding agreement with the United States Geological Survey for the operation and maintenance of multiple stream gauges throughout the watershed during the period of October 1st, 2021 to September 30th, 2020, or I'm sorry, 2022. The combined agreement amount is $110,340, with the Little Kind of River Basin Development Commission contributing $99,640. And the United States Geological Survey contributing $10,700, and approve a joint funding agreement with the United States Geological Survey for the Little Kind of River water temperature monitoring during the period of October 1st, 2021 to September 30th, 2022. The combined agreement amount is $15,330. With the Little Kama River Basin Development Commission contributing $10,665, the United States Geological Survey contributing $4,665.
Second.
A motion and a second. I was going to say, could you repeat that? But that would be me. All right, so this is paying the government now to do what, Dan?
These are the annual agreements that we do with USGS to monitor and maintain all of our gauges that we have along the system and within the watershed. You want me to, I can read them to you, which ones you, if you like.
I'll defer on that. My question would be is that, I mean, how much maintenance have they done in the past and how old are these things?
Well, they go through every quarter and they calibrate them to make sure that they're actually measuring the correct thing. You sometimes will see on the gauge where it will spike or jump, and then they put that it was actually.
They come out and jiggle it?
No, I actually seen them. They have a little truck that lives, they fix it to make sure the electronics all work. Glad you're having fun. By the way, just a Robert's
rule. If it's not fun.
Just a Robert's rules of order, you should probably say the motion failed on the previous one because it was tied at 4-4. Yeah, it's just a.
Somebody has to say it. I don't know if you can count. What is it?
The motion failed because they didn't have a majority.
So okay.
4-4.
So the motion failed. Do I have to say that for Robert's rules, David, or is that just something that has to be put into the record? Okay. I don't have to make a speech or anything. Okay, good. Thank you. All right, so here we are on this. I'm finished. Any other questions? Paying the man for jiggling it? All right, we've got a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Yes. Yes.
Anthony Broadbent.
Yes.
Derek
Nivens. Yes.
Dave Castellano.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ritchie.
Yes.
William Baker.
Oh, yes. All right. Next up, statements to the board from the floor. If you want to help us make this a better project, please come up to the podium, state your name and address, and help us. Yes, sir.
Jerry Lee, 5997 West 30th. I was here last month, and I'd like to see if I could get a clarification on Dan's statement regarding the legal aspects going on. From what I understand, seemed to me like they're looking for a loophole to use the 15 feet on the south side of my property. Is that correct?
So what's your question?
Are you looking to use 15 feet on the south side of my property?
Oh, I don't know. Well, Mr. Wicklund, are we to that point yet?
I have no idea. I don't have to hand
up. So we're not in a position yet to answer that question.
Well, you know, I asked several other questions last month. Are you in a position to answer those?
No, I think the update that you heard today was what we heard as it relates to where we stand as it moved that through the process.
Okay. But that's what I'm asking you. Is there any discussion as to removing the fragmite? Is there any discussion as to inspecting the banks or fixing the banks on this?
That all that's being reviewed.
All that's being reviewed. Yeah. You do realize that I've been after this for decades now, years and decades.
And I respect that.
Okay. Has anybody here read my email chain? Have you looked at my email chain? Has anybody come out and looked at the easement to see what the issues and problems are? I'm just looking for you to do something.
I understand. And we're working on it.
Is there any time frame?
I'm not going to give you a time frame, sir.
Is there
anything else we can help other than the things that we've talked about? You supplied the things as we talked about last month. Thank you very much. And we're going through the review and getting that done. We're going to try to make it right. How's that?
Well, that's something. That's okay. More. Yeah. Can you keep us in the loop?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that this is the first I heard, you know, coming to this meeting. And when I dropped off the paperwork to your attorney, I asked for it. Why? We're doing this with you. Why that be submitted to the attorney? I mean, I have some questions, and you are a public body. I mean, I love.
I understand. And you're definitely one part of that whole public scenario, without a doubt.
Correct. I realize that I'm a little bitty small part, and I'm probably a pain in the, you know what? But hey, it's a little bitty small part. It's not very big in the overall scheme of millions of dollars. So why can't you fix this little problem? It's a little problem. Why can't you address it? Why can't you fix it? I don't understand it.
I understand. You've made that very clear. Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Okay. I'll see you next month.
Thank you. Anything else to help us move this along? Going once. Come on. This is the best part. Going twice. All right. Closing that up. The next date for the meeting is going to be the third Wednesday of the month. We're going into September. That'll be the 15th. Check the website on the location. We'll need to entertain a motion and vote on the next part of this, unless we all want to talk about something. Mr. Ware, do you have anything to say?
No, I don't think so. Just thank you, everyone, for coming. Great presentation. I made a note. I'd be interested to see the presentation at NERPC, possibly, if I could try to fit it in. Everybody have a safe and happy Labor Day weekend.
So, Chief. Nothing to add. Mr. Wyszulinski.
Nothing to add.
Mr. Gazdecki.
Again, I apologize for being late. I appreciate everybody showing up. Very nice presentation, and we look forward to resolving any open issues that there may be out there.
Mr. Brodnix.
Yeah, thank you to Earth Charter and Joanne for presenting today. Really much thanks. Glad to really see the public today. September always reminds me, and I know the chairman will talk about it, that will be the 13th anniversary of when the flood actually happened, and so those yellowing pictures are always meaningful, especially in September. So just we're in a much better place system-wide than we were in 2008, so I'm happy about that.
That's it. Okay. Mr. Nimitz.
I just want to thank everybody for being here tonight, and I enjoyed your presentation. Thank you very much.
Mr. Castellanos.
Yes, I want to say to the young ladies, I want to thank you very much for that excellent presentation. Considering what Israel is going through right now, climate change, you are the next generation that's probably going to save us. So keep up the good work. Also, I'd like to compliment Dan and Commissioner Wisniewski on a very nice show that they did on WJOB a couple weeks ago. Guys did a real nice job. But also want to give kudos to Anthony Rodnex for his appearance on WJOB. He got a lot of calls from a lot of people. He appeared with the deputy mayor and with the redevelopment director for the city of Gary. A lot of people called in and were really complimentary in regards to the information that the commission is doing and doing for the community. Thank you. And by the way, I want to also end it. Have a very safe 4th of September.
Thank you.
I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Spend a second. You want to discuss it? Okay, now Mrs. Lambert, roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you very much, everybody.